Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program about health, fitness, nutrition, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. Our first interview is with MJ Turner from the Summit Bike Club. The club has gained tremendous popularity with our regional youth and has also been awarded Club of the Year for the second straight year by USA Cycling.
And then we'll speak with Jill Johnson, Parkite, native Parkite, longtime local, and owner of the Paint Mixer located on Lower Main Street. She'll talk about a twist on what they do there. It's a way to move from stagnation to manifestation.
And you've probably heard that May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and our local organization, Connect Summit County, is hosting a series of events throughout the month. On the 17th, Kevin Hines will speak at the Jim Santee Auditorium and share his story as one of 2,000 people to jump from the Golden State Bridge and one of only 37 to survive the fall. Kevin joins us today.
This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Gordo here.
And I'm Larry with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW.
Since 1974, we've been part of this community with shared ride, private van, and SUV service for our customers.
Reservations available at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, proud KPCW sponsor of Cool Science Radio. Have you been told you need a total knee or shoulder joint replacement? Information about alternatives is available on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Summit Bike Club has gained widespread participation and popularity with kids here in our local region, from Salt Lake City to Heber and Park City. The club instills the value of integrity, respect, perseverance, leadership, and accountability to their members as they educate these athletes about the skills, safety, and sportsmanship of cycling. MJ Turner is the founder and the president of the club. He's here to let us in on this season of cycling coming up. I guess it's already started, really, officially. And he's here with one of the riders in the club, Jacob Sackett. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Jacob, you want to get right up to the microphone there.
Like this.
Yes. So, MJ, we talked to you, I don't know, 3 years ago or so when you started the club.
Yeah, I think we talked pretty quickly after I started, and we had another follow-up. It's been a couple of years since that, too, I think.
Right.
But yeah, since then, Summit Bike Club's won Mountain Bike Club of the Year from USA Cycling for 2015 and 2016 seasons. So we're really excited where it's all taking us. And as you mentioned, we've got all of our programs around here locally in Utah. Jacob, who's here with me, is from Texas, and we started a program around the Austin area this year as well.
Kidding.
It's just kind of blowing up. And
wait,
just,
how do you run a program in the Austin area when you're from Park City?
We find coaches, and Jacob's dad is kind of the director for that area, basically, and he's one of our board members. It's just finding the right people to kind of help manage that, and then we have the coaching foundations and stuff on how to coach and how that all works, and so find the right people and just implement it in new areas.
Wow. So you're kind of franchising out this concept. What is different about the Summit Bike Club from other bike clubs? I mean, one of the things I can see right now is that you're about teaching other skills and as we say in the intro, instilling different values, which is so important. I love that you do that.
Yeah. My background's from alpine ski racing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of how I'm designing what our program is from that, and having a progressional for the athletes to go from when they're 9 years old all the way up until 22, 24, from just learning all the fundamentals and teaching them in the right areas and stuff for what they need at that age. And then for like Jacob here, he's a pro. He races as a U23, travels the country, travels internationally. He's going with us to camps in Canada and Europe this year. So we're just trying to help provide these opportunities in a lot of different ways.
One thing I notice, MJ, and maybe this is a misperception and you can help clarify, but it seems like your bike club has pretty high aspirations for your members. You're training them to be what I would consider to be an elite caliber, or maybe, you know, creating a conduit for that as a possibility, where I guess maybe you could say any bike club does that, but you seem to be very successful at that. Is it a focus, or is it just a sort of an unintended consequence of the program?
Originally unintended. When we first started, we had kids who were around that 9 to 12 years old, and I had just gotten into the sport, so I had no idea what we were doing, what we were getting ourselves into, what else was out there. And as they were kind of getting older, we're seeing the opportunities at Pro XCT races across the country, and then we started seeing the opportunities for athletes to go around the world. We've had athletes attend world championships. And so we do want to create those opportunities, allow athletes to be able to take the sport as far as they want. It's an Olympic sport. They could win a gold medal in the Olympics doing cross-country mountain biking. But at the same time, we don't want to force kids to have to race. We want to help them. It's a lifelong sport at the same time. So we want to do it where we're not super pushy and strict on you have to do this race or that race, or you have to race at all. But if you want to, racing's a good opportunity to learn and get better and faster and keep loving the sport, but at the same time, just have fun with it.
And I want to ask a follow-up to Lynn's question about, you know, the franchising concept of your organization throughout the country. And, of course, it sort of started here and then went a little bit more regional with Summit County and Wasatch County and Heber, and now you're talking about Austin. And how does that happen where, I mean, doesn't Austin have bike clubs? And are you displacing those bike clubs, or are you presenting a different model, or is there room for everybody? That's kind of an interesting idea that Austin would be receptive to a bike club that originated in Park City, Utah.
Yeah, it is very interesting. There's just not very much out there. The sport is not very developed in the alpine ski world. There's not that many resorts and stuff. As mountain biking, you can basically go anywhere. There's a trail, and it doesn't have to be a mountain area, or it doesn't have to have snow and stuff. So there's a lot more areas out there that have the opportunities for cycling. But there's not the foundation of having clubs and all this different stuff. And USA Cycling's awesome. They support us in good ways. But for a new club, it's kind of hard. There's not the coaching materials for coaching on the bike. They have stuff for more the endurance aspect of it. But so we're trying to help develop that. And so when we go and create something in Texas, we're helping develop that and having those opportunities and provide those resources for them rather than them trying to create it themselves like we've had to in the last few years.
Yeah.
And so we're still trying to develop that as we're going to.
Jacob, were you born and raised in Austin?
Yes, ma'am. All around Austin.
Yeah. And so when was the first time you hopped on a mountain bike?
Probably 2006 or so.
Okay.
So quite a ways now back.
Yeah. You were young when you did that. And in terms of trails, I've never been to Austin. It's one place on the globe I would love to go, and I've never been.
It's a beautiful city.
Great place.
Yeah.
Trails or no trails?
Yeah,
or?
There's quite a bit of trails around Austin, and then we have our own trail at our house, actually. So we get to ride that quite a bit.
Do you live on a kind of a ranch? Or
yeah.
So? Oh.
Yeah, basically.
Did you build the trail?
Yeah, me and my family. So we've kind of got to manipulate it however we want and make it better as we progress.
That's called home court advantage.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, do you host races on it?
Yeah, high school races, actually. They just had one recently and seemed to go really successful. So
That's great.
And then how have you integrated with the Park City Club? Because do you have a second home here in Park City? Are you here part of the time? Or is it just a coincidence that you're sitting with us today?
No, I'm kind of traveling throughout the summer a lot with these guys, and I'm staying with them throughout the summer for the most part. And, so from Texas, they give a bit better, like, opportunity or whatever to go race bigger races, which most of the time athletes wouldn't get just being on some regular bike shop team or something. It's a lot harder to do without support there. So these guys help out a lot with that at races.
And so, I guess there's a seasonal component to it. Austin probably gets a little toasty about this time of year into July and August.
Training's a lot different for sure compared to here.
Coming out here, you kind of get that seasonal aspect of the race season hitting this area, and maybe in the winter or shoulder seasons, there's a race season in Austin.
Right, yeah. The bigger series kind of goes on throughout like this time of the year, and then it seems, I guess, here you have snow, so you don't do it in the winter. But in Texas, there's a fall series, so you can kind of race all year round if you want. But it's a lot different for sure.
And MJ, are you doing that with the rest of the club? Are you sort of moving around, you know, the country, taking advantage of the rolling season and the seasonality of the race calendar?
Yeah, that's something that when we introduced the Texas program, we had to figure out what that season was, how we deal with it. The high school leagues, those are awesome and incredible and provide a lot of opportunities for more kids to get into the sport. And here in Utah, that season is in the fall. And so our main season, as Jacob was saying, like the big races are about now. They started a month and a half ago, and they go through July as nationals, and that's kind of that part of the season. And then we have our local races with the midweeks and weekly and I-Cups and stuff that are happening, starting up just about now as well. But in Texas, the high school league's going on in the spring. And so how the practices happen and how integrating with that and keeping opportunities for both programs to happen at the same time. And those races, it's, a little bit more difficult, but figuring it out. And we've had some camps where we brought some Utah kids out to Texas, and I think that was in January or so, and trying to integrate as much as we can. And we have a race that we're putting on this weekend, the TechDev Pro XCT. So it's one of those national level races. It's one of 8 or 9 in the country this year at Soldier Hollow. And so I think almost all of the Texas kids are coming out, and we've got a bunch of our athletes here in Utah coming to race it as well.
How big a race will it be? I mean, participant wise, what sort of numbers?
So far on pre-registrations, we have about 200, which for a first year event, we're pretty excited about. We've got 40 plus of some of the top pro men and women and juniors and stuff across the country. There's people from Canada, and I don't know if there's any other countries so far, but over 10 states and different stuff for people coming here, which is one of the big things we wanted, bring people to Utah. We've got incredible riding. So
talk about this series again. What is the series that's bringing this race here?
So last year we started a little race series. It's kind of, in the end, a test for this year. The Mountain Bike Technical Development Series, or TechDev for short. And part of what the race is it's not just a cross-country race. So for this weekend, we have skills opportunities. So little skills courses where on obstacles where kids go through that and ride on balance beams and over logs and whatever, different things to get them kind of moving and kind of a trials type of stuff. So they have that for juniors and U23s. And then we have short track races and cross country races. And then we've got like athlete celebrations and campings right there, and just trying to make a bigger like festival. And we've got vendors and more of an event rather than just a race.
Right.
Is there a citizen category so Lynn can show up, or does she have to be a kid?
Yeah, there's
and
there's
Tim.
There's categories for all ages and abilities. So there's adults and juniors and beginners and UCI international level pros. So there's different courses and opportunities to kind of match the abilities and all that. So there's
what we really need to know is that if Tim and I show up, we can't be in that 35 and over class. That just is not going to work. We need the I need the 50-plus women's category, and you need the
57-plus men's category.
Do you have those for
us? Yeah, we have that. There's like 19 to 29, 30 to 39, 40 to 49, 50-plus. It's kind of right around where it is. And then there's Cat 1, 2, 3s within each of those as well. You can kind of find your right age group and skill level and kind of fit in.
And distance.
And then, so yeah, as a Cat 3, you're just going to do a little bit less distance. There's a little less technical stuff on the course. And Cat 2s, it's a little bit longer. And Cat 1s, you kind of step up to the basically the pro level course, which it's a hard course. It's got some really technical features, some good climbs. We've gone out there the last 3 weeks and built a bunch of new things, trails, new sections. If you've ever raced Soho, this is not going to feel like a Soldier Hollow race at all.
They're hard.
We climb and descend and have rocks and drops and all kinds of cool stuff.
Oh, that's great.
We've raced Soho, but only in the winter.
Right.
On cross-country skis. Yeah. Have you ever done a mountain bike race over there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you have.
It's hard.
Okay.
Yeah, most of the cross-country or mountain bike races are kind of like the cross-country where they're on those roads and a couple of little single tracks. And so, yeah, we've added to those, so there's a little more single track and less road in general, so makes it a little more fun.
Yeah. So, Jacob, I have to ask you, being a U23, do you have to compete against Keegan Swinson?
I do, yeah. Actually, we just raced him yesterday, actually, at the local race.
But, is that right? Yeah. Of course, Keegan is our local hero.
Yeah, he's a great rider.
Yeah, he goes along pretty quickly. There was a time when I could ride faster than him.
Yeah, when he was 5.
He was about 5. Well, you're doing great. Just amazing work. I feel like you started this almost like when you were in high school, but I think you were just out.
Yeah, I was about 18 or so. I graduated high school a year early when I was 16, so it was a couple of years after.
Because you had bigger things to accomplish.
But I was ski racing, and I graduated high school a year early so I could focus on ski racing. And at that time, the timing worked out that I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. But mountain biking kind of filled the gap eventually, and it's kind of taken off for me. So it's good. It really is crazy where it's gone.
Yeah, this has been your job, right?
It's basically my full-time job, and it's a lot of work, and hopefully it pays off. But where it's come in the last 5 years, I had no clue. And where the next 5 years go, yeah, again, I have no clue where it's going to keep growing and going.
Yeah, so what would be your advice? You know, a lot of young people, 18 years old, they're wondering what to do, where to go. And you know, somehow you found your niche and you didn't, like you say, you didn't know it was going to end up like this. What have you done that has kind of made you find this? You know, there must be a few key things that you have followed.
I don't really know. I just have the self-determination, I guess, and I don't know how to do everything. I just try to figure it out and learn and, I don't know,
just
figure out what needs
along.
To happen, and then you keep learning new things, seeing what else is out there, fix your mistakes, learn from those mistakes, and make changes, and they're not always right, so then you try to fix something, and you fix it worse, or you just, keep moving along.
That's great. So as I'm looking here, our guests or our listeners, of course, can't see this, but it's the 2016 USA Cycling Club of the Year for Mountain Bike Club. It's a beautiful trophy that looks like a chain ring. Were you named that for the entire country or?
Yes, for the whole country. And I've got another one for 2015 sitting at my house.
Wow. Congratulations.
I have an office so it can sit and be visible to everyone.
That's right.
You know, MJ, you talk about the organization and the growth and sort of the business plan and being a little vague, but where does your funding come from? Is it a nonprofit, a for-profit? Is it kind of these kids are funding themselves through their family support, or are you gaining grants, or how's that all coming
together? It's a 501c3 nonprofit. Yep. Majority of the funding comes through membership dues, which then pays for the coaching and some of the travel and for the work that I do. To manage it all. It is my full-time job. And then we do have some grants and some sponsors and some different things that help us do some extra stuff that we otherwise wouldn't do. But yeah, it's pretty much self-sufficient. And so we become a part of the Live PC, Give PC and some different things like that as well.
Yeah. So people are listening now. They're wondering, how can I sign my kid up for the Summit Bike Club?
go to summitbikeclub.org. All of our programs have started. Our U12, our youngest ones, just started up last week or 2 weeks ago. Registrations are still open for a little bit. And if they're closed, just send us an email, contact us from the website. We're always open to make things work and fit your schedules and change up our membership to kind of match what your needs are. So just reach out if there's any questions on those kind of things. And then for our race, you go to growmtb.com. Our hashtag, our signature hashtag, is hashtag growmtb.
Grow.
Like, we want to grow mountain biking.
Okay. Grow so, MTB.
And we're kind of developing some new things on that site, too, that you can kind of look up besides just the race.
Nice. MJ Turner and Jason Sackett from the Summit Bike Club, thanks so much for joining us today. And best of luck. Maybe we'll see you out there on Saturday.
Yeah, it'd be great to have you out.
All right. And stay with us. It's The Mountain Life. We'll be back to talk about moving from stagnation to manifestation with the paint mixer and Jill Johnson when we return.
Miller Orthodontics is a proud supporter of The Randy Barton Show. Since 1988, my wife and I have provided a combined 45 years of orthodontic care. For our Invisalign patients, we provide digital scanning and imaging technology that eliminates the need for wet molds of your teeth. More information is at m2ortho.com.
Hi, I'm Courtney Johansson, owner of 350 Main Brasserie. We are pleased to support KPCW. 350 Main is located in the historic Golden Rule Building at 350 Main Street and serves contemporary American cuisine. We are open nightly at 5:30 p.m. Reservations, menu, and contact information at 350main.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. We were just speaking with the Summit Bike Club. Wow.
Yeah.
They do great work.
From nothing to something, really quickly.
I know. Well, from nothing to something, you too, with our next guest, can manifest. I love that. Stagnation to manifestation. Jill Johnson is the new owner of the paint mixer here on Lower Main Street in Park City. And Kirsten Gunnerud is with Rocket Trike. They've put together a new workshop of sorts. It's a twist on the paint mixer, maybe. But it's coming to you as a four-week exploration to give your idea life and to move from stop to go. So if you have an idea and you want to nurture it along and turn it into something, manifest your vision, then this is for you. It's a four-week, on Tuesday morning, course, beginning next week on May 16th. And we're so glad that Jill and Kirsten could join us here in the studio and right up to the microphones. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Jill, why don't we start with you? Okay. I'm a little bit confused, I have to say. I thought the paint mixer was a place where I go to paint my beloved pet and drink wine.
Well, yeah, of course. We're not taking that away from you at all. Do not worry. That's still there. But, you know, I bought the paint mixer, gosh, it's been 7 months, and my background's in art therapy, and I do a lot with trauma and PTSD and MST, which is military sexual trauma. But I could see where the paint mixer also aligned with that and my business side of growing up in this town and growing up in a family business. So Kirsten and I met, and we've had ideas for a while now, have been brewing and brewing. And then all of a sudden, we started noticing how they were coming forward for us was if we were playing with them. We found that if we were too serious, which most people know I can't get that serious or else I get in trouble. And so we noticed that if we looked at things in different ways, we had more agility than if we were just trying to sit down by ourselves and figure it out. So we wanted to create a workshop, and we've been saying it forever, play it forward. When we first met, that was kind of like our tagline, our hashtag together. We're like, play it forward. And so that's really what prompted us to do this. So the paint mixer is still the paint mixer, but now we're combining forces and we're bringing the purity of play that I have and Rocket Trike that she has and creating this workshop that combines both.
I want to hear about Rocket Trike in a minute because I have no idea what that means. But Jill, you said something about the old paint mixer is still there. So the old model still exists for the people who want to paint their pets, drink wine, and then paint their wine bottles. So that's happening. But there was this other opportunity. Was it not happening using art as therapy? And you saw that as a completely different possible model for the paint mixer?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to grow. I see the model that it is. And I also want to think of what's coming. You know, paint and sip is kind of in the culture right now. But what's the next thing? So I'm always kind of looking at how, where are we going next? And for me, I've always used art as my way of processing. It's my background and it's what I do with clients. But I also see how we come into that space and create. It doesn't always have to be therapeutic, but it does do something for you. It helps open your mind. It helps you get more playful. It helps you relax, whatever way you look at it. So we still have, you know, you come in, we have the, you know, painting du jour at night, and you can paint with our incredible artists step by step. And we still have great wine from our local sommelier and beer. But we also wanted to start integrating because we have open space during the mornings. And yeah. We really wanted to start bringing more ways to create and play into that space.
So Play It Forward is Tuesday mornings beginning next Tuesday, May 16th, running through June 6th. It's from 8 to 9:30 a.m. And Kirsten, talk about what Rocket Trike is and how it plays into this.
So what Rocket Trike is, if you think about a trike, that time that you were on that trike for the first time and the freedom that you had and the lack of boundaries that you had, and Rocket is about the momentum that goes with that. So when we go back to that place where we can play and imagine, amazing things happen. One of my favorite quotes by the author of The Little Prince has always been that it's only with the heart that one can see rightly, for it's invisible to the eye. And idea comes from the Greek origin of to see. And so when we think about it, our ideas are our heart's way of talking. And so Rocket Trike's all about getting out of your head, getting into your heart so that you can find your best answers and move forward.
When I was a kid, I was way into Rocket Trikes, but they were big wheels. And I had a brother, I have a brother who's 7 years younger, so he had these big wheels. And we would get them in the driveway and rip down in a race formation into the road, which is extremely dangerous. But we were on a private road, so that was okay. And we would go for like a mile down this thing, and it was really fun on little trikes.
I think we should have some trike races on Main Street.
I'd be for that.
Oh, my gosh, totally. JJ and I used to do it in Morning Star on in Thames Canyon. That was a good,
that's scary.
That
still
could
a
be
good
a
4th
of July float. Paint mixer float.
Oh, that's a great idea, Tim. Okay.
So it's rockettrike.com if you'd like to explore Kirsten's website a little more to find out, well, also how to register for,
yes.
I keep sort of referring it to as a workshop, but it is, we're just going to call
a
it Play It Forward. It's a play shop.
Woo!
There we go. And so let's just quickly, let's say I've got an idea for a business. I want to...
Yeah, or maybe seven ideas.
I don't know. Let's say I want to start up a business where I have decided a new twist on how to do flower pots. And I want to, you know, bring that to fruition. So what's going to happen on the first day, Jill?
So the first day really is our exploration with each person. You know, we can't come in with assumptions of what they want to do. So it's really our chance to find out where everybody is and where they are in their process. And then from then on, Kirsten and I are really tailoring the whole thing to what each person needs. So as much as we'd love to have this really set agenda, we have like our plan, but we also have the plan of no plan because we want to walk into it and really see what rises for each person. What we've noticed is that when we are collectively working, we do much better to get that idea some momentum. A lot of times the idea just sits because we're just afraid. You know, we create all of those obstacles so easily, and the best way to create those obstacles is to get in your head and just wallow in your thoughts. And so we find that if we have an ability to create a space where people can just come together and play with the ideas, most likely someone else in that group will probably have something that helps push that momentum forward. So we just wanted to create that space where they can come. So they get the workshop and then they get one-on-ones with us. And we have, you know, varied experiences over the year. And, you know, we're still growing. We still have tons of ideas and we laugh at the ones that are sitting on the shelf. But we always think that there's a space and time for them, and we just want to make that space. A lot of times we're just too fast right now. We're going, you know, from one thing to the next, and it's just nice to create a time where you have to show up and look at that idea in its face and start like playing with it.
And it's important, too, that it can be any idea. It doesn't have to be as big as a business. Mm-hmm. It could be an idea for an adventure that you want to go on. It could be an idea for just something you want to create on any level. And we can play with that and take it to a new level.
And there's something about accountability. Yeah. You know, when we have a little tribe that can show up for us, I know I'm much mm-hmm. more accountable than when it's just me. So we also want to just create that tribe that can be like, hey, we see you and we're here and we're going to keep checking in on you and making sure you're moving forward.
Yep.
I love it. So you can call or email Kirsten at 801-201-4443 or go to Kirsten at rockettrike.com. I'm sure if you just go to rockettrike.com, you can find how to register.
Exactly. rockettrike.com/upcoming events.
Excellent. It's Play It Forward, and it begins next Tuesday at 8 a.m. Drop the kids at school. Come and do this for an hour and a half.
Yeah, and Atticus is right next door, so there's coffee if you need it.
Yeah, we're not starting the wine.
Well, you know, if that helps your ideas, I'm not against it, you know.
It sounds really wonderful. We'll have you back afterwards to hear about, you know, maybe bring someone from the workshop, from the play shop, and let us know how it all went.
All right. Thank well, thanks, you guys. We love listening to you. We're like kind of big fans.
Thanks.
I'm glad. Jill and Kirsten, thanks for your time.
All right. Thank have a good you. One.
And we're going to go ahead and introduce our next guest. Kevin Hines is one of 2,000 people to jump from the Golden Gate Bridge in an attempt to commit suicide. He is one of 37 to survive that jump and one of 5 to have achieved a full recovery. Kevin will speak at the Jim Santee Auditorium on May 17th as part of the series of speakers presented by Connect Summit County. He'll share his story of what happened for him as he passed the point of no return and realized that he wanted to live. Kevin Hines, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's such an amazing story, and it's hard to start anywhere but to just talk about what happened to you when you were 19 years old and you were suffering extreme mental anguish, bipolar disorder, not really knowing where to go, and you attempted suicide. Not only did you attempt suicide, but you flung yourself off the Golden Gate Bridge and survived.
Yes. It was, I was in the worst place I'd ever been. I was quite mentally unstable, and I was in a great deal of pain, and I believed that I had not one other option but to die from my own two hands to go over that rail. And I was hearing voices in my head telling me that I had to. So I was in a pretty terrible situation.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing in reading about your story, Kevin, that struck me is bipolar disorder with the added twist of having this psychotic experience with the voices, which I don't think always accompanies bipolar disorder, but I could be wrong.
Well, I have bipolar disorder with psychotic features, so it accompanies mine on a regular basis.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Just very interesting altogether, the Golden Gate Bridge. I have heard it told that this iconic structure that identifies a city more readily than just about any other structure in any city, built in 1937, 2,000 people have committed or attempted suicide, and only 1% or so have survived it. I just have to ask you, what was it about that? I'm just curious about that part of it, of why the bridge. Is there something?
It's very simple. It's very simple. There's nothing magical about the bridge. There's nothing amazing about the bridge except for its iconic beauty. But I was in a state where I just saw a 4-foot rail, which means an ease of access to lethal means. And an ease of access to lethal means is what I gravitated toward, because it was simple. I thought I would die upon impact, and I was wrong. There are tens of ways to die off the Golden Gate Bridge. Most are terribly slow and violent. I didn't know that. I went there because I thought I would just disappear into the abyss, never to be heard from again, because I was in that much pain. I mean, there's not much more to it. Everyone talks about how there's... Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Oh. Everybody talks about how there is this allure and this beauty, but it's really not about that. People aren't going to die because they believe it's a gorgeous place to exit this world. They're going there because it's easy, because it's simple, and because it is accessible. One of the only ways that we know 100% to reduce suicide is to reduce access to lethal means of all kinds. In the 1800s, in a town in, I think it was Britain, there was a gas stove that people were taking their lives in. They were putting their heads in, and they were turning on the stove, and people were dying. When they switched the mechanism in the stoves to become, it was impossible to do that, suicides dropped in that county and the metropolitan counties around that area because they reduced access to lethal means. There have been many instances across the globe where this has occurred. Another occurred where a group of pharmacies decided to only give out, if you could go get aspirin, you could get two pieces, and then you have to come back when you need them again. But you don't get a bottle of 30 or a bottle of, you know, a bottle of 100, you get two pieces. And the suicide rates in that area dropped, and they dropped in the metropolitan counties. So we know reduction of access to lethal means, which is why raising the net at the Golden Gate Bridge will actually save lives. And we have all these people that were up in arms and will say, oh, they'll just go somewhere else. But that's not true, actually. In a study of 500 individuals by Dr. Richard Seiden, who've been studied over 25 years, a period where they found out in studying these individuals, 96% of them never attempted again after getting mental health help, and they were able to recognize their value and never attempt again out of 500 individuals. So they don't just go somewhere else. And this idea that the aesthetics of the bridge are too important to change, I always say to that ideal, what are the aesthetics of a piece of iron compared to one beautiful human life?
Kevin, we've been doing some recent interviews with, we did one with Gail Hornstein just recently, and she talked about the relationship that people have with the voices that they hear, or their status of what we would call mental health or mental wellness, and people have different relationships. And what I heard, what I heard in your story was that you had two competing narratives. One was you had to die because you were a burden to everybody that loved you and everybody that you interacted with, and that was the story that your mind was telling you. And then there was this other narrative which didn't win out prior to your leap over the railing, which is you didn't want to die for whatever components fit into that. And they were competing at the same time. And
yes.
And this is what I want to ask you about. This is kind of a long way to get to the question, but in that moment of regret, when you had passed the point of no return, you had leapt over the rail and it clicked, the narrative that you did not want to die for the first time, it sounds like, in an awful long time, won out, but it was too late. Was that,
right.
What kind of experience was that for you? Was it spiritual, or was it just matter of fact, or, you know, what happened in those 4 seconds before you hit the water?
Right. In those 4 seconds, first of all, instant regret for my actions, understanding that I just made the greatest mistake of my life and it was too late, that went through my head. And then the only words that went through my head for the rest of the fall until I hit the water were, what have I just done? I don't want to die. God, please save me. And then I hit the water. It was a very rapid thought process in my head. It would have to be to make it into that 4 seconds.
and going down in those waters below and realizing that now I'm alive and I'm drowning. Oh my gosh, I don't want to drown. What have I just done? And the idea that suicide and suicidal ideations are irrational comes to play in the idea that I was 70 feet beneath the water's surface thinking, I'm going to drown. I don't want to drown. Why did you just jump into a giant body of water and think that this wasn't going to be the outcome? You know, it was that complete irrationality of and distortion of reality that led me to do what I did in the first place. If people can recognize that before they get to that point, the reason I go out and talk is so people can see they don't have to do it the hard way like I did. Or if they've done it the hard way in the past, they don't have to repeat that situation. Like, you know, if they can recognize that their thoughts do not have to become their actions, and that today's pain is not necessarily tomorrow's future. You know, if they can recognize that just because they have a thought of suicide, the first thing that must be done is turning to someone they know who loves them or cares for them or takes care of them and say, this is my thought. It doesn't necessarily mean this is my action, but if you're in a state of mind where it is your thought and you're considering an actual means, like you're actually planning a suicide, that's the time to recognize never to be silent in your pain, to stand up metaphorically and say, I deserve to be heard upon these thoughts in my head. I don't have to keep them inside. I can find someone that will guide me to safety. Now, whether that is the crisis text line or the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or working through the feelings and the thoughts in therapy or all of the above, you know, just realizing that, listen, if all our thoughts had to become our actions, we'd all be in jail for road rage.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you, I mean, you talked so much, and I think you talk when you are in front of a group of people a lot about if you had only reached out or if you had only had someone reach out to you. You know, it sounds so simple now that you're on the other side, but what kept you from saying, I need help, or I'm a whole heap of trouble to the people right. who loved you?
Well, it's not simple, but I do recognize that I didn't have anybody to ever share this information with me. I didn't have anybody advocating for my mental well-being on a regular basis within therapy. Certainly my mother tried, but the doctor never told me that with treatment and hard work, I could get better and I could stay well. That was never told to me, and it never crossed my mind because I thought this was going to be my forever. I'd always be in this much pain. I'd always be this depressed and this suicidal. I didn't know that with treatment and advocacy for myself and really hard work and time, I could live a really nice life, a good life, a happy life. And to answer your question, I couldn't see anything but a darkened tunnel vision on the day of my attempt. I couldn't see that when my father tried to have me be with him that day, he was trying in his own way to keep me safe. And all I could hear were the voices in my head at that moment. See, it's momentary. So at the moment my dad is trying to help me, I'm hearing voices in my head saying, you must die jump now. At the moment on the bus, I'm hearing the same thing. And on the bus, I'm trying to stay alive while my brain is trying to kill me. In the essence that I'm desperately saying internally, Kevin, what are you doing? You don't have to do this. You're 19. You don't have to die. Call anyone. But then the voice would click in and scream, no, Kevin, you must die. Be quiet. And this is a third-party voice, a male's voice that I don't recognize as anyone I have ever known screaming to me, command hallucinations that I have to go. And really, to be frank, both voices were going back and forth. One I felt was me. One I felt was a separate entity telling me I had to die. And I, you know, frankly, it was so overwhelming that second voice. I was on that bridge. The lady walked away when I took her picture. She asked me to take her picture. She walks away. I said, nobody cares. The voice said, jump now. And I did.
So, Kevin, that voice, do you still hear it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not every day. Yeah. Not every day.
No, you talked about it. I assumed.
It's not always say, yeah. It's not always saying the same things.
Right.
It's just command hallucinations.
And so the fact, I want to talk about that voice in the space it occupies in you and the space that the other more beneficial voice or state of being occupies. And I'm wondering, prior to you going over that rail, it sounds like the space was occupied by the negative, by the challenge, by the voice commanding in a very big way. And I'm wondering,
yeah,
after now, in your life today, because it still exists, because you still manage the challenges, is that space the same and the other space that is actually Kevin Hines has grown and actually grown around it so it can contain it? Or has that negative space shrunk?
The negative space certainly has shrunk, but only after years of finally being honest in therapy. That's what I also talk to people about, is if you are going to have any chance in finding hope, you have to be honest in your therapy. If you get the benefit of having some, you have to be honest. If you don't have cognitive behavioral therapy or dialectic behavioral therapy or any kind of true form of reputable proven therapy that works along with your treatment plan, if your treatment plan is art therapy and meditation and exercise, that's fine. But remember that you have to get some of this out to someone. You've got to get it out of your system and in the open so that you can fight in the open and recognize that you can't do this alone. None of us can. And if you're in a solitary environment where you are, living on your own and you don't have too many really close contacts to vent this kind of pain to, the one thing I recommend people do is find someone in some setting that they can do that with, that they can just vent their pain to. I regret greatly silencing my pain for so long and leading up to that jump. There were so many times where I wanted to tell my dad the truth behind my symptomology. There were so many times I wanted to tell him the voices, what they were saying and how they were treating me. There were so many times I wanted to be honest, but every time the voice would tell me what I had to do. And it would tell me to be quiet and silence my pain. So I recommend that people never silence their pain because it's what makes us human. It's what makes us vulnerable. And if you can be vulnerable in front of somebody else and tell them your darkest hour, you can heal from that hour.
That's what I was hearing, that term vulnerability. And
yeah.
It sounds like you struggled with being vulnerable enough to be honest, to be truthful, to share for whatever reasons. I mean, we all struggle
yeah.
for, various yeah. individual reasons with vulnerability.
Well, for fear and shame, really.
Right.
For fear that they'd lock me up in a white-walled padded room and throw away the key, and for the shame that I was putting on my family, or at least that I thought I was.
That word shame, I think, is so key, and it's so key to why you are part of this May Mental Health Awareness Month in Park City, connecting hearts and minds. Our guest Kevin Hines will be here in Park City speaking on May 17th at 6:30 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium. Your speech, your talk, that your presentation was based on the book that you wrote some years ago, Cracked, Not Broken, Surviving and Thriving After a Suicide Attempt. And that suicide attempt was coming up on 17 years ago. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. 17 years ago, as of September 25th of this year, I will be 17 years past the day I attempted to die off that bridge. 17 years past the day most thought I would have died. I look at life today like this. It is our greatest gift. And I believe that if we are able to hold true gratitude in the face of great pain, we can do anything. Meaning that if you can be grateful for quite literally every place you get to go, everything you get to do, and everyone you come into contact with, good, bad, or otherwise, you can change your life. I was so depressed for so long that I had gratitude for little to nothing. I took people in my life for granted that tried to help me. I took instances in my life for granted that were remarkable. today, I try my best to take no one, nothing, and no place for granted, because it is all part of my journey. And I appreciate it. Even when I find people in my life I don't like very much, I appreciate that they're there to challenge me in some way. It's a true sense of gratitude and appreciation for life that I would have never had had I not experienced this. That said, I don't wish this on anybody in the world. It was the most terrifying experience of my life. It was the most physical pain I'd ever experienced, along with the most mental pain I have ever experienced. I only wish for people to not take the hard road like I did, and to recognize they deserve to be here, and we need them.
I can only imagine, Kevin, when you're speaking in front of groups, whether you're at a high school or at a mental health awareness presentation, or many of the military groups it sounds like you speak to around the world, you must look out in your audience and see a connection that you make with people. Do you feel like, I mean, you can just pick out the people that were like you, and you know that you're speaking to them? It must be like a lifeline that you're giving them.
Well, that lifeline goes both ways. It's something that gives me the most catharsis, and it's the most therapeutic thing I get the privilege of doing. I get to tell a story. And we know today, you can talk to people like the deputy director at SAMHSA, Kana Enomoto, about the science of storytelling. You can learn from Dr. Nito Kordenthaler, who discovered that talking about your suicide attempt, but also talking about how you found and lived recovery, actually leads to saving lives. You can talk to these folks, and certainly Kana will tell you that the science of storytelling, when they look at the brain while someone is telling a story like mine about recovery, what they're finding is things or areas that light up in the brain that prove they are walking in the shoes of the storyteller. And if the story has a hopeful ending or a hopeful current state of mind or situation, it leads people to consider working tirelessly to change their lives. So that's fascinating in of itself. But being able to do this every day around the world, you better believe I look at the audience and I see people I connect with immediately who are visibly in pain. And we make sure at my team and my wife and I make sure that we go and we interact with those individuals each and every presentation. And if that means staying back after a presentation until 100 people are done talking to you, then that's what you do. And inevitably, that person that you saw or that I saw that is sitting there in emotional distress and you can see it in their face, they're usually the ones to stay all the way until the end when everybody's done. And they come up and they say, I need help now.
Wow. Well, we're so thankful and so lucky to have you coming to Park City in the middle of May to speak to an audience during the May Mental Health Awareness Connecting Hearts and Minds. Kevin will be speaking at the Jim Santee Auditorium at 6:30 p.m. on May 17th. And that talk is free and open to the public. Kevin Hines, we're so thankful you could join us today on The Mountain Life. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I greatly appreciate it, you guys.
All right. We'll see you soon.
See you soon. Take care. Bye now.
Again, that was Kevin Hines' incredible story, and he'll be speaking a week from tonight at 6:30 at the Jim Santee Auditorium. The talk is free, and it's part of Connect Summit County Mental Health Awareness Month this month.
And we want to thank our underwriters, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Park Meadows Country Club, Park City Mountain, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, and Davidson Orthopedics.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.